Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Greetings and welcome inside the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Oh!
We are live from the Geico Studios. As fireworks go off across America and everybody turns into Mike Harmon, old man, get off my lawn. I'll tell you what, Mike, I didn't think about it till the last couple of days, but this big push this year more than any other with fireworks going off, you know, this is what happens the month before we get to 4th of July, really from Mother's Day till the 4th of July. We get fireworks going off during the day. People lighting off fireworks. Everybody hates it. Hates it. Goes off during the day. What is going on? Why are people sending off fireworks? I saw stories on CNN, Huffington Post, all over the place about, people are really fed up with fireworks now. And I'm like, yeah, this is that just that kind of year because this happens every year. But, you know, 2020. So I got to see it live and in person today when people on our block are calling me and Pam saying, hey, what can we do about making sure people don't light off fireworks? I mean, this is where we're at right now. We're in a tough time, Mike Harmon.
Well, it's a lot of people just burning their money is really what it comes down to there. I used to do a nice retrieval system when neighbors would do bottle rockets and stuff.
Okay.
I'd get up real early the morning of the 5th.
And all
anything
right.
that blew on my lawn. I'd bring them back all the remnants.
Okay. All right.
That's a nice thing.
There you go.
You fill up
Take
a trash
those,
can, and here's all your crap, jerk. So, yeah, I don't quite understand the obsession with it. I think at one point my dad bought like a $4 thing and just said, all right, here it is. Also a city cop, so he wasn't going to encourage any, you know, stupidity.
Trying sure.
to follow the letter of the rules there, or the law. So, yeah, at one point it was one of those little things that kind of spun in a circle and burned out. He goes, there it is. That's it. Watch the rest of the people burn up their money.
I feel like it's just, you know, look, this year, because obviously everybody is on edge and everybody is pissed off about stuff and everything going on. But every year, fireworks go off. But this year, it's, no, I don't like the fireworks. I don't like them when they go off during the day. I don't like when I hear a couple of bottle rockets go off at 1:45 p.m. I don't like it. I don't want to hear an M80 at 4:45 just when I'm going to make dinner. I don't want to hear
any of this nobody stuff. Wants to hear the M80 because you're also at a heightened awareness that there's other crap going on. So don't add that to the mix, right? Everybody's on a bit of edge.
It is. It's tough. It's tough.
Right? I mean, look, isn't that kind of the summary statement off of what we discussed in NASCAR the last two nights? Everybody's mm-hmm. on edge, so it went yeah. to a code red. And then you can decide. I mean, and still, you know, Bubba Wallace today puts out his statement of the support of NASCAR and everything. But last night was still fiery rhetoric. So, you know, likewise, the fireworks – if folks are a little bit on edge, that's probably not helping.
No, it's not. It's definitely one of those things where you can say, all right, I get it, but really it's just fireworks going off. Let's everybody just calm down a little bit here. Let's just figure everything out.
That and it's just, I mean, think about the cost adding up. That and it, where did you go find fireworks during the pandemic? Was this all just sitting stored away? Hey, box for next summer. What do you got there? Fireworks. Where is it stored? Down by the furnace. Why? I mean, you know, so you have that part of the element because I don't think you had the roadside stands all set
no.
up like you would
no.
most May and June months of years past. So, you know, people were fully prepared.
So while we are all, you know, figuring out what to do with fireworks and the love-hate relationships we have with them, today is one of the, maybe because of the way we're starting the show, you can feel today is that kind of day. We are now in a really weird position as it comes to sports returning, when the NBA comes back, when Major League Baseball comes back, because we have the agreements. Major League Baseball is signed, sealed, delivered. They're going to try to report to training camp a week from today. The NBA is making their plans. Teams are already figuring out how to get to Orlando for the bubble season they're going to have there. And yet every day we get more reports of positive coronavirus tests involving athletes. Today, Malcolm Brogdon, Jabari Parker, Buddy Hield. Last night, it was Charlie Blackmon in Major League Baseball to go along with members of the Philadelphia Phillies who've had members test positive for COVID-19. Many GMs have said today in the NBA they are nervous about the bubble plan because we're still seeing athletes get COVID-19, and luckily they're recuperating. They are, you know, they're taking care of themselves and being, you know, we're sick for a little while and moving on. So, you know, they're fortunate that way. But now it's gone from, okay, how is sports going to return? Now we're here. And now it's, what are we going to do with the coronavirus? And what are we going to do with it? And I understand the weird time we're in because it's like we want to fast forward and get there and see how it goes. And hopefully something incredibly positive happens, something big happens. But to take you through the nervous time, I think what I would tell people nervous about the NBA, or whether it's a player, whether it's a team, whether it's a GM, even Major League Baseball too, I would tell them all the same thing. I would say, listen, I said, don't think of it as this huge, daunting task that you have to get through, right? Like last night we talked about, hey, you get what you get, you don't get upset. If sports comes back and they play for a little bit and it goes away, we just celebrate the sports being here because eventually, look, that could happen, right? We could see a sport resume and not play and or resume and not be able to play and then we move on to the next sport. And eventually all sports are going to come back as we figure out a way as we continue to deal with COVID-19. You know, so if you think about that perspective, that would help. Now, for the nervous time, because now it's rubber hitting the road for both sports. All right, the agreements are here. You got to decide if you want to play. If you're going to play, I know people are only playing and they're only doing it because A, for the money, you know, and B, because, boy, what's going to happen if I don't play? What's it going to be? What are my teammates going to think about me? No one is going to this restart all full of sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. 100% going, this is going to be the greatest thing in the world. No, everybody is nervous. And when you think about something being, you know, 3 months long and NBA GMs and teams and players going, my goodness, am I going to be able to stay safe for 3 months? What is it? Don't think of it as something that's that long. Don't think that we're going to play the season. Don't think we're going to play the, just think we're going to try to play. We're going to try to play and see if we can. And we're going to know before any games are played if we can play this season in the NBA and Major League Baseball. Just that we're going to go, we're going to try, because you have to try, right? We have to try and see and see how things go, because with players, what we've seen from the athletes getting coronavirus, the health, the great health they are in, it's they're sick for a while. And this is the vast majority of people as well, but they're sick for a while, they recuperate. Okay, so we have to try. But think of it as trying, because if something happens and we can't do it, we're going to know before we play a game. The NBA and Major League Baseball is going to say, you know what? We tried. We can't do it. All right, everybody go home, and we'll figure things out later on. But obviously this season can't happen. Just think about it that way. And if you think about, hey, we're going to go and try. And if we try it, okay, great. It's almost the same philosophy of trying to get, you know, one of your friends, or trying to convince your you know, your wife to go on a roller coaster ride, or convince one of your kids to try a new sport. Hey, just try it. Hey, just try this for dinner, okay? Try this pasta. If you don't like it, then we'll try something. But just try it. Just try it. If you just think about that, we're going to try to play the season, it becomes less daunting. It becomes, let's go day to day and see how it goes. Because when you think about it being a three-month task, it gets to be way too much. And it gets mentally overwhelming, and you're thinking, how can we do this? But we're going to go try. And when Major League Baseball reports next Wednesday, they'll know within a week and a half if they'll be able to play games. NBA, same thing. They'll report, they'll know within a week and a half, can we play games? Are we getting positive coronavirus tests? How are we doing? So if you think about it that way, that's going to be much better mentally for players and teams to approach these coming seasons.
Well, it's like anything whenever you talk about a sport, right? We talk to NFL coaches, and what is it? We go by the quarters, right? We're going to look at the first four games, and then we evaluate, and then we go to the second quarter and move forward. Likewise, you know, baseball's in a dead sprint. Basketball is an 8-game ramp up. Probably not a lot of juggling in terms of playoff seeding, but we finish it off. We get a little bit of the slim down Zion, or whatever it is we're being sold that he is, and people get excited. So, you know, take it one homestand at a time. Take it one block of games, one calendar week, whatever it is. knowing that they're putting in whatever protocols they can that the union agrees to, obviously consulting medical professionals as best they can in each municipality to make sure everybody's on board. All right, you're coming from state X. What do they say here? And let's figure this all out. And then you roll, knowing you're going to have positive tests, knowing there's going to be the alarmism, right? Because we see even a couple of the positive tests announced today, and all of a sudden, everybody's got their megaphones out going, how are we going to play? It's like, you're going to play. Just like everybody else is trying to go back to work. Just like those folks go to Walmart, Target, the grocery store every day. You figure it out. And you apply best practices, and you move forward, and you get momentum. And you've got baseball teams already talking about fans in the stand, including my White Sox. We'll see if Lightfoot lets that happen. But if you're going to let people back into zoos and aquariums, you better damn well let them back in the stadiums, is all I'm going to say that to that. If you can go watch meerkats pop their heads up, I can watch a guy pop out to short. So we go through this going to Orlando. Yeah, it's a unique experiment, a unique time. You know what? Get the cameras out and let's document it all.
Look, Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon live from the Geico Studios. We're going to get to camps, right? We're going to figure things out. And I can see the NBA, all the players getting there. And I can see a scenario where the NBA and Major League Baseball says, okay, now we have control of the players. All right, now we can make sure they're living in the quarantine we trust them to. Because, look, what's going on is players aren't adhering to quarantine. Look, Buddy Hield positive coronavirus test. I read today that last week he played in a Skins League game in Oklahoma and scored 45 points. So the guy's playing basketball.
He was filling it up. Look at that.
Amongst when he shouldn't have been playing in a gym with a bunch of people. And here he is getting positive coronavirus test. So you're going.
Players go to play, right? I mean, that's it.
This is what teams have to fight against, is that the players aren't doing what they should be doing. A lot of people aren't doing it. We're done with coronavirus, and that's just stupid. But now they feel like, okay, now we're going to have the players. Now we have control over them. So now we can make sure they don't do anything that's going to expose them to the coronavirus. So I can see that being a great scenario that, hey, wait a minute, you know what? This whole thing is working. Now that everybody is around the team and they're around each other, it works. The old Bill Parcells theory that the worst part for him for a football team was the time when they weren't playing. Because you leave guys to their own devices and sometimes bad decisions get made. But when you're around the team every day and you have that sense of togetherness and responsibility, you're going to do what you can for your team and you'll be a good teammate. He said, I never had to worry about my team while we were together. So I can see that part of it for the NBA and Major League Baseball, that, you know what, we're together now, it's going to work. It's going to work, and we have control, and make sure that, you know, maybe a night where you wanted to go out and do X, Y, or Z, now you can't do it, so you're staying safe and you're staying home. But I can also see us going to the bubble and practicing for a few days and there being a bunch of coronavirus tests that are dotted across the landscape, and the NBA says, you know what, we got to pull up stakes and leave. And suddenly the bubble idea never even gets off the ground and everybody is going back and we're trying to figure out a way forward from here because it just didn't work. So I can see those things happening. But that's why, since no one knows, just think we're going to try to play. And if we try to do it, okay, great. And if it doesn't, we're going to know way ahead of time that we can't do it. Mentally, that will do a lot for everybody involved.
Take those next steps ahead, best practices, and treat these folks like adults, but talk to them like they're five-year-olds. And here's the diagram of how this really screws this up and takes money out of your pockets. Put it all down in dollars and cents, and it'll start making more sense.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
My goodness, did we get a big NFL story crop up and just say, hello, I'm here, everybody. Kind of like, you know, Harmon in the middle of the night after going on a bender. Suddenly just shows up in your room with just his underwear on going, hey, I'm here.
You gave my clothing too much credit. Yeah, let's get it.
That was the story that hit us today by Manish Mehta, New York Daily News, Jets insider, who's going to join us coming up in a couple of minutes. Why suddenly is Jamal Adams want to be traded? Why suddenly, after he has talked about wanting out for a while, but I'll still stay with the Jets, why suddenly in the past week is he pushing to go to Dallas? Has he officially requested a trade? Manish made a report that the fissure between the Jets and Jamal Adams cracked open because of the bad relationship he has with head coach Adam Gase. Here's some of the facts that, or here's some of the story that Manish Mehta has on Adam Gase. Major factor why he's uncomfortable with the team. The team does not respect Adam Gase. He has lost the respect of the locker room. He has rubbed them the wrong way with his inability to lead and lack of support. This is coming right from Manish Mehta's article. Too many people, including players, coaches, and front office members don't trust or believe in Gase. They feel he's disingenuous. They feel he is insecure and will always point a finger at other people. All of this stuff we have seen over the course of the past 14 months. Last week, he fired a longtime team trainer, John Melody, which was really, you're firing this guy because he was so well-liked in the organization. And the only reason that he is around is because Sam Darnold and David Fales, the first and second string quarterback right now, because Joe Flacco is still coming back from injury, are the only ones who really tolerate him. And this is where the relationship is. Nobody likes Adam Gase. He's alienated the players. And the only reason he's around is because Sam Darnold, quote, tolerates him. I don't doubt any of this. Because look what have I told you, Mike, from the beginning with Adam Gase? He didn't learn his lessons from Miami. He alienated players in Miami. He's alienated players here in New York. He's alienated Le'Veon Bell. He's now alienated Jamal Adams. The only reason he is still the coach is because if you fired him, suddenly this would be the third head coach and the third offensive system that Sam Darnold would have in 3 years, and you are never going to be a good quarterback if that's the case. I guarantee you that's the only reason he has a job is because Darnold hasn't said, hey, let's get rid of the guy. And they thought the best thing for his growth is let's keep him in this system. But really, I mean, you know me. My whole big thing is I say I don't get certain actors or actresses' appeal, why people think they're such good. Why this guy's not really a good actor. She's not really a good actress. I can't believe the job that they get in Hollywood. I feel the same way about Adam Gase. Adam Gase failed with Miami. The players hated him. He didn't learn any lessons because he jumped right from head coach of the Dolphins to the head coach of the Jets. His offenses stink. They finish in the bottom quarter of the NFL every single year. I don't get the affinity for him. Did Peyton Manning really, did he screw the Jets for a second time in 20 years? He wouldn't come out to the draft in 97, and he recommends Adam Gase a year and a half ago that, hey, you got to hire Adam Gase, so okay, we're going to hire Adam Gase. I don't get the draw of why the Jets had to have Adam Gase.
You're damn right he did. And let's bring on Manish to explain exactly how miserable this situation is.
Manish Mehta joins us now on the hotline, New York Daily News Insider. You know, Manish, we're going to have a conversation right now, and we're both going to say to each other, oh, yeah, that's it. No, yes. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. I reading your article today and seeing this story just blow up this afternoon, everything in there, I said, yeah, I don't understand the affinity for Adam Gase. I don't understand how the Jets loved him. I don't understand how they still think he's good because his offenses are terrible. He's alienated players, and I keep coming back to the same thing, and you alluded to this in your column. If it wasn't for the fact that Darnold would have his third head coach and third offensive system in 3 years, Adam Gase would be gone, and I feel like I'm just waiting for that to happen. At some point it's going to happen. I'm just going to wait until the day it happens.
Well, I can assure you that if Sam Darnold ever did go to ownership and say that I can't evolve and grow with Adam Gase, then Adam Gase would be, in all likelihood, fired tomorrow. However, that's not practical because that's not in Sam Darnold's makeup. It's not part of his DNA. And I genuinely do think that Darnold hopes that this marriage with Adam Gase works, and that's just kind of how Darnold is made up. I mean, he kind of looks for the best in everybody. He's also an extremely young player. Not everybody is 23 years old in that locker room. There's people on both sides of the ball who have more experience, have been around the league, kind of understand the business aspect of it more than Darnold does. But look, I think part of the reason that Gase is still here is because of what you just said, having three different coordinators in the first 3 years of your young quarterback's career is a recipe for the disaster. There's also a real financial element to this, and that should not be discounted. The Jets ownership does not want to be on the hook after firing a coach after 1 year, because coaching contracts are guaranteed. So, that's another element. And then perhaps the most important element is that the person making the decision on Adam Gase's ultimate fate will be Woody Johnson, who is the actual owner of the team, and he's over in the UK as the ambassador for the Trump administration. The indications are that Woody will be back, really regardless, I think, of the outcome of the election, that Woody will be back at the end of this year. He's the owner. Christopher Johnson was the acting owner, the placeholder, if you will, while Woody was overseas, and he is the one who hired Adam Gase. I do not believe that Christopher Johnson will have an opportunity to determine the fate of another head coach. So, all of those elements are in play when you're trying to decipher, why Adam Gase is here still and how much longer he will be here and what he needs to do to, keep his employee.
All right, Manish, what are the best odds what that we're going to see as a result for the Jets? When they start playing, Adam Gase and Jamal Adams are both Jets. Adam Gase is a Jet and Jamal Adams isn't. Or Jamal Adams is a Jet and Adam Gase isn't. What's the most likely of those scenarios?
Given those three options, I would say that the most likely scenario would be that both Adam Gase and Jamal Adams would be with the team when the season begins, assuming the season does begin in a couple months when they go to Buffalo for their first game against the Bills. I think you read part of the story that I wrote today. What was particularly jarring for me, not necessarily surprising, but jarring really over the past year or so, is getting this information kind of trickle in from all corners of the organization, players, coaches even, front office. They all say variations of the exact same thing, which is that Adam Gase is not respected in the building. And anybody who tells you that Adam Gase is respected in the building is being disingenuous, because that's not true. That's not accurate. That's not a reflection of what is happening in that organization. Some people tolerate him in the locker room. The quarterbacks, quote-unquote, like him, for lack of a better word, because he does invest most of his time with the quarterbacks. But by and large, the rest of this team does not respect him, and for good reason. It's because of his actions, how he comports himself day in and day out. He is not a leader. I have written that ad nauseum because that is the information that I've gotten over the past 12 to 15 months. And over the past week or so, with this Jamal Adams situation as the backdrop, I've been inundated from people in the organization, all levels of the organization, basically reinforcing what I've already been told, which is that Adam Gase is an issue with not only Jamal Adams, but with other players. They don't want to play for him. I can't be any more blunt about it. He has a history of this, as everybody knows, in Miami. You outlined the fact that he has not been successful without Peyton Manning. The most remarkable stat surrounding Adam Gase is that he has been in the NFL for 17 seasons in some capacity. He has been part of a winning team only four times in those 17 seasons. And in three of those four seasons, Peyton Manning was his head coach, was his quarterback. So think about that.
No, I think you said the right way there. Peyton Manning
you
was
got
his
it
head
right.
coach. I think you got
head
it right.
Coach, quarterback. Peyton Manning was associated with the team that he was on. When Peyton Manning is not associated with the team that Adam Gase is a part of, Gase has been a part of one winning team in his NFL life. So, just as a coach, as a football person, nothing personal, but as a coach, Adam Gase is a proven loser.
Wow, you just summed it up nicely right there, Manish. So we've got Jamal Adams, and that's the one on the front burner. In the back is Le'Veon Bell just sitting there sipping on a soda pop and waving? I mean, because that's got to be percolating there too.
I think it's fairly obvious what that relationship is really about. Le'Veon Bell was deployed in the worst imaginable way last year. It wasn't that long ago, guys. The end of the 2017 season, the Steelers lost in the playoffs to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Le'Veon Bell's last game as a Pittsburgh Steeler, he had over 150 total yards and three touchdowns. I know he took a season off. No wear and tear on his body, but I know he took a season off. He didn't suddenly go from that type of running back, arguably the best all-around running back in the NFL, to a running back who averages 3.2 yards a carry and is largely an afterthought, which is what happened last year. That's because largely the people around him, but perhaps most importantly, how he was used. And this is a head coach who never wanted him in free agency. Le'Veon Bell essentially was forced on Adam Gase by the former general manager and the acting owner. Those are the two guys who wanted Bell. And Adam Gase, frankly, isn't flexible enough or open-minded enough to understand that he had a dynamic weapon at his disposal. Instead, he tried to conform Bell into his own offensive scheme, and it clearly didn't work.
New York Daily News Jets insider Manish Mehta with us here, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon, live from the Geico Studios. All right, so Manish, we've heard the stories. You just talked about how the Jets don't want to play for him. Jamal Adams doesn't want to play for him. Yes, he has been someone who, as we've seen in post-game press conferences, is not going to point the finger at himself, is going to point it at others. Give me a story. Give me something that happened maybe off the field that you could tell without burning a source. I don't want you to do that. But give me a story you can tell that's like, wow, this is one of those shining examples why Jets players don't want to play for Gase.
Wow, it's hard for me to do that without violating some confidences.
I've got the blowtorch ready. Let's get it.
I will put it this way. Look, he has publicly thrown the offensive line under the bus. He did that, I believe, after the first game, so it didn't take him long to throw the O-line under the bus. I will say this, and you guys can interpret it any way you want and look into it any way you want. No player on this roster, literally no player on this roster, has been immune to his criticism privately. He had thrown virtually every meaningful player under the bus for underperforming, every single one. And you can kind of rewind this conversation and listen back to who we talked about earlier. He has criticized and thrown virtually every player under the bus. Nobody is immune. Literally no player on this roster has been immune to him, taking a shot at.
Wow, that's a nice laundry list. Smith, now we got to start going through articles. We got to go work those secondary sources to find out some of those great stories in the offing there. Back to the Jamal Adams situation here. Obviously, the more he talks, we've seen rumors of the 49ers. Obviously, he's talking to people randomly. Hey, you coming to Dallas? Yeah, I'm in. I'm coming. I'm trying to. Does he show up in camp as a Jet, or is this just done where he just waits for the call to send him somewhere else?
Well, look, if I were a 24-year-old all-pro player, it'd be very difficult for me to not play football. I can't obviously get into Jamal Adams' head, but the one thing that every Jet fan knows, maybe not every NFL fan, but clearly people that follow the Jets on a daily basis, they know that this guy has an incredible work ethic. He doesn't cut any corners, and he legitimately loves football. He's not a guy who's going to mail it in. If you gave him a big-time contract, like, for example, Mo Wilkerson, that guy tanked as soon as he got a big deal. I'm fairly certain that everyone who follows the Jets realizes how much Jamal Adams is dedicated to playing football. So I would say that he would be playing football. I don't think he would sit out. Again, I don't know that definitively. I'm going off the last 3 years, going off of what I know about him in terms of what football means to him. This is not only a superstar player, guys. He's a guy who does not get in trouble. He's been a good face of the franchise for 3 years. And I know that there's angst between Jamal Adams and some of the fan base. They don't necessarily like how he has said certain things publicly on social media. What I can tell you is, based on the information that I have collected over the last, almost year, I would say that any fan, if they were privy to everything that has transpired behind the scenes, or most of everything that's transpired behind the scenes in the last year or so, I would suggest and tend to think that most fans would understand where Jamal Adams is coming from. I do understand where the Jets are coming from, on some level, but I've had people in the organization try to justify things that I have been told, about what has happened over the last 6-7 months. And, frankly, those justifications are ludicrous. If the Jets were in the right, I would say, I think the Jets are in the right, the players in the wrong. But in this particular instance, knowing what I know has transpired this offseason, I can tell you that the Jets are absolutely not in the right.
All right, lastly, Manish, the one thing I would say, because I you know, there is this part of it, and you know, this goes back really, you know, like 40 years, is that anytime the Jets give big money to somebody, it never works out. I mean, and you're staring, you know, you go back to extending Mark Sanchez when they didn't have to, the money they gave to Mo Wilkerson, who just quit, and now you're after he got paid, and now you're coming off the big investment in Trumaine Johnson, and they had to move on from him. If they hadn't gotten burned so much, you know, just take it away from Gase for a moment, if they hadn't been getting burned so much in the, like I said, the past 40 years, if they hadn't been getting burned so much, would it be easier to give Jamal Adams the money and say, okay, this is going to work? Yes, you're the guy we give the money to, because you do give it to a guy like Jamal Adams. But seeing the track record, boy, everybody we've given money to, nobody's worked out, and we're trying to figure out the end of contracts.
Yeah, I don't think that should really impact your decision-making, because every case is different. Obviously, the decision-makers are different. Ownership, by and large, is the same over the last 20 years or so. But for the most part, you know, these guys who are making the decisions, the head coach, the general manager, you know, there's turnover there. You know, you can't be gun-shy about that kind of stuff. If you believe a guy is worth the investment, you pay him, regardless of past failures, because past failures don't necessarily indicate that you're going to fail and make a bad deal with the current guy. So I don't know if that should factor into the equation. What I do know is that there needs to be an open and clear line of communication. When you have muddied communication, that ultimately leads to fractured communication, and then you get, you know, chaos, which, you know, on some level is what we have right now. You, as an organization, you have to have an open, clear dialogue with your player, especially if this is the best player on your roster. Jamal Adams is far and away the best player on this roster. And to not have a clear dialogue and an open dialogue, to me, is confounding. It's really strange to me. I don't want to lampoon the Jets gratuitously. However, I cannot wrap my brain around the notion that you would not have a free-flowing dialogue with your best player who's looking for a new deal.
You can follow him on Twitter at MMehtaNYDN, MMEHTANYDN, Manish Mehta, longtime Jets insider. Check out his latest at the New York Daily News on what's going on. Players, including Jamal Adams, do not want to play for Adam Gase. Manish, as always, thanks for staying up late for us, my friend. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you.
Thanks, man. Be good.
Wow, that was a blowtorch.
That's like, how do you really feel?
Ooh, man, that's like he was Fireball from Running Man, and he's just like, I'm gonna torch. But look, you know, look, Manish Mehta, look, these are people I've talked to for the last year plus, and we've known that people don't like, and players don't like Adam Gase. Privately, public stuff we see that the average fan can see and go, boy, Adam Gase, what's he doing? Throwing the members of the team under the bus, not taking it responsibility for bad plays and bad decisions he's made, not being a successful offensive coach because his offenses finish in the bottom of the league all the time, and the players don't like him. None of this really has been disputed from anywhere, and it's just one of those cases where I don't know how long it's going to be until the Jets just decide, but I feel like I'm just waiting it out. It's an inevitability that Adam Gase is going to get fired, and we'll have to go through this year, and then it's going to be another head coach, Jim Harbaugh, and then who knows who's next, who's going to come in and, you know, take over the team, Pete Carroll. You have no idea who's going to want to do it.
Wow, and Pete Carroll gets another run as a Jets coach?
You know, but listen, because they're going to need Urban Meyer. Somebody's going to come in from somewhere and take over, and really, Nick Saban, be able to try to coach Sam Darnold and get him to the next level, Kyle Shanahan. One of these guys is going to do it. So I just feel like I'm waiting until that happens.
Kyle Shanahan. You had me with the wishing and hoping of the rest of the guys. All right, they're old and they want a new challenge. Kyle Shanahan.
Wow. Big stuff on the biggest NFL story the past few days, without a doubt. Manish Mehta.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Let's talk, because we talked about last night a little bit when the decision came in. Many teams will have a chance to win it all this year where they normally wouldn't, because they can uniquely take advantage of what a 60-game schedule has to offer. And there's different teams that can do it in different ways. It's what I'm going to lay out for you. Because, look, there's some teams that in over 162 games would have no shot of overtaking anybody and winning the division and getting to the playoffs, right? But when you talk about 60 games, there are definite things that are right in the wheelhouse of a lot of teams that you wouldn't expect to be contending. But could you see him catch lightning in a bottle for 60 games and then you stay hot in the playoffs and do it? Absolutely, and there's different reasons for it, but this short season, obviously teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees are going to be the favorites to win the World Series, and they should be because on paper they're the most talented teams. But there are a couple of teams out there. I got at least four teams that I could say, boy, if they won the World Series, I can see it happening, and I wouldn't be surprised at it.
I like it. You've colored me intrigued.
All right, so let's go with a couple of teams here. And again, we're going to go over four for the night. All right, the first team I can tell you about is, I know this is going to surprise you, but this is a team that's on the way up already, and they haven't been on the way up for a long time, but now they're on the way up, and they have prospects who are showing up, and they're starting to show they're pretty good. It would not surprise me, getting hot, the San Diego Padres. Think about this for a second, because the Padres have something uniquely that they could take advantage of this 60-game schedule, right? We know the prospects they have on the way up, right? They're going to rely on Machado. They're going to rely on Tatis, who came up and was fantastic. They have other big building blocks. They added Zach Davies and Drew Pomeranz in the offseason. But here's the thing about the Padres, right? Chris Paddock looks like he's going to be a star, right? He had a really good year last year. And he loves to get into it on social media, too, with a lot of people. You have some other young pitchers that are coming up, like Mackenzie Gore, who is projected to be a high-end starting pitcher. Andres Munoz throws 100 miles an hour. You are talking about relying on young pitching. Now, over the course of 162 games, does that work out? No, because all young pitching hits the wall at some point. Pitchers are only going to throw a certain number of innings and before you have to either power them down or before they lose their effectiveness, because they got to build up to be able to be a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball from April through the end of September. But 60 games, you're talking about these guys making 10 or 11 starts before you hit the playoffs. We have seen guys stay hot that have shown up, hey, through 10 or 11 games, look at that, they're 8-2. They're having a phenomenal season. Then as we get to the middle of the season, the end of the season, they kind of fall back to the pack a bit because baseball either catches up with them or they hit the wall a bit because, you know, they're just not throwing as hard or they're not throwing as well because mentally and physically they're tired. But can I see these, you know, the Padres' young arms come up and over the course of the first few weeks, could they win 35 games and make the playoffs? And suddenly, hey, all this young pitching, all this full of adrenaline, guys that don't know any better, can I see the Padres making a run there? Yeah. Are you talking about surprise teams now that are outside there? I can see the Padres be a surprise team making a run and winning the World Series.
I like the way you think. I like the cut of your jib. And Dodger fans right now are just waving you off, going, that guy's insane. What's he talking about? How about I go to the American League and give you one?
Okay, give me one. You can't say the White Sox, though. Your White Sox are actually not bad. Like, your odds are just like a couple below the Mets. You're like, what, 25-1, the White Sox?
30-1 right now.
Okay, you can't say the White Sox.
Alongside the Phillies and the Indians. Phillies are interesting. They're at 30-1, but certainly going to be well off the radar because everybody's just assuming your normal heavyweights run away with that division and hide. When you got the Nationals and certainly the Braves, you know, it's not easy pickings at all. But certainly, and your Mets. I have to begrudgingly throw them in. I'm going to go look at the Texas Rangers because they have three veterans at the start of their rotation. When you look at coming in with Lynn, Minor, and Kluber, you got guys that can all eat innings. Right, so the potential of having to work through the early part of a 60-game stretch, and those arms will still be fresh, and they're battle-tested when you get down to it for the playoffs as well, right? You're not going to have guys that are suddenly wide-eyed and it takes on some other meaning. And maybe this is just the weird year that even for the kids, it doesn't happen. Yeah, Frostberg just posted to Twitter, we're laughing with a picture of Ron Burgundy responding to your San Diego Padres.
But look, I understand that. I understand that nobody really thinks of the Padres or knows they're good young players that are coming up.
Sure.
But this is what they've done for the past 5 years. They've done the 76ers. They have built up a lot of good young players, and here they are. They're on the way up. And in a normal season, maybe the Padres are a 500-ish team. But we're talking about 60 games. And you're talking about getting out of the gate fast and mashing and the young pitchers not having to throw a lot and being able to go all out for the entire season into the playoffs. Yeah, surprise teams. I sleep on the Padres at your own risk.
That's no, I got gotcha. You. And that's why I went absolutely crazy town with my 100-to-1 shot of the Texas Rangers, looking at the three veteran starters at the front of your rotation once we get to the playoffs. You know, in theory, that's what you need, right, is just guys that can eat some innings for you, make it interesting, and give your lineup that is so replete with power all the way through. Santana's going to be your everyday center fielder. He's got pop. The Todd father's still getting some at-bats. Odor can launch Gallo, et cetera, go through their entire lineup. I mean, they're going to put up runs, and now it's just make them count. And Texas, I think, could surprise because, I mean, Houston's far and away favorite for the division. And then we've talked a lot about why not us when it comes to the Angels and to the Mariners, which we'll get into as the show goes on. And Oakland, just like Tampa Bay, they win games. You're always left wondering, how did they do it? You've never heard of these guys. But, again, a young rotation will keep them in it. But I say for Texas, 78 wins. Kind of surprising last year, given all the considerations coming in. So we'll throw them on the board here for 2020.
Look at you throwing the Texas Rangers out there. Awesome.
Why not?
The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon live from the Geico Studios. I'm going to give you another team that can win it all for another different reason, being able to take advantage of the shortened season. And this one is more about hitting than pitching. But, you know, we mentioned them really briefly last night because we talked about, you know, if you're any bottom feeder team, you have to be able to go into the season and say, hey, why not us this year, right? It's only 60 games, right? It's not 160 games. It's 60 games. Why not us? Watch out for the Angels, right? Joe Maddon taking over, right? They paid all that money for Anthony Rendon. Their lineup is deep. I mean, they are going to hit the baseball, and Ohtani at some point is going to come back and pitch. They have a lot of pitching questions, and I understand that. But in a 60-game season, not 162 games, they can hit their way by teams over that amount of time. Now, they don't need their pitching to be great. They just need it to be okay. And look, they don't have good pitch. I'm going to tell you they don't. But Mickey Callaway, as bad a manager as he was with the New York Mets, and he was terrible, he's completely out of his depth. As a pitching coach, he's been fantastic. He was great with the Indians. He was great with the Mets starters. Zach Wheeler is making all kinds of millions of dollars with the Philadelphia Phillies now because of Mickey Callaway. Steven Matz is now staying healthy and part of the Mets' future because of Mickey Callaway. Jacob DeGrom won the Cy Young again last year. Well, I mean, that was just DeGrom. But you've seen what he can do and the effect he can have on a pitching staff. And all you do is get these guys to pitch okay. I'm not saying Mickey Callaway is going to show up and suddenly, hey, guys, we go 1-3 with anybody else in Major League Baseball, but you can make those slight improvements in a division that isn't as strong top to bottom as you think it is, and they mash, and you can mash over 60 games. Watch out. I mean, the Angels could be that team with a new leadership. They got a new lease on life in Major League Baseball, and suddenly, bang, here go the Angels and win the World Series.
I like the way you're thinking. And Albert Pujols won't fall apart. 60 games. Mike Trout, meaningful at bats because there's only 60 games.
That would be the most meaningful at bats he's had in a while.
Outside of opening day. That's damn right. Or winning a truck in the All-Star game.
I mean it because this is a team that forever has had the mashers to be able to win games 9-8 all the time. But the problem is, you know, you can't do that all the time. You know, you have to be able to have some nights where we don't need to have the offense go out and score 7 runs to win. And look, like I said, it's about the shortened season and about what you can do over 60 games in the playoffs and stay out. Now, once you get to the playoffs, you're going to need some kind of pitching because there's always less hitting in the playoffs than there is in the regular season. But this lineup, the way it is, You had a big bounce back season from Andrelton Simmons. You got a lot of mashes in this lineup, and now you're adding Anthony Rendon. Oh my goodness. And Joe Maddon, certainly, you know, if they're going to listen to anybody, suddenly here comes Joe Maddon. It's okay, guys. This is how we're going to do things. All right. Got it. I mean, the Angels are a team that people can really sleep on, but like I said, it's that short schedule and that you got to take advantage of.
He'll be crazy, but it's fresh and new to them as he lives out of his RV waiting for the season to start.
Yeah, it's like, you're like my uncle. He used to say that to me all the time. Whenever he would give me something, I would go, hey, what is like, he'd say, hey, I got a t-shirt for you. Oh, great. And I would get it. And I would go, I feel like he's worn it and washed it and given it to me. I go, oh, is this new? He goes, it's new to you. What do you care? I'm like, no, you're right. Thanks. I appreciate the t-shirt, Jim. Thanks. I got it.
That was the old line for reruns in the spring on NBC.
It's new to you.